Hey everyone, and welcome to another deep dive. You know, I'm really excited about this one. We're tackling the book of Exodus.
Oh, wow.
And you know what's even cooler? This one came straight from you guys. We got these amazing lecture notes from a seminary course. It's called Exodus to Exile by Professor Robert Van Noy.
I've heard of that course.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And these notes are packed with so much good stuff. We're going to be digging into all sorts of things like...
The historical context.
The historical context, for sure.
The big themes.
Yeah, all those big themes. And maybe even, like, crack a mystery or two along the way.
You know, there's a lot of mystery surrounding the Exodus.
There is.
Especially the date.
Yeah.
No one can seem to agree on when it happened.
Well, let's see if we can get a little closer today. So are you ready to explore the Exodus with me?
Let's do it. I always say Exodus is way more than just a story.
Right.
It's really the foundation for so much of what we understand about faith in history.
Exactly. And even the name itself, Exodus, it's got layers to it. I mean, we call it Exodus, but that's actually from the Greek. The Septuagint.
The Septuagint.
And it means like exit or departure.
Right, like a mass walkout.
Yeah. But the original Hebrew title, Wele Shemo.
Wele Shemo. Much less dramatic.
Wele Shemo. It means, and these are the names.
And these are the names.
Mm-hmm.
Professor Van Noy always pointed out that this less dramatic title might give us a clue to the broader scope of the book.
Okay.
Because Exodus isn't just about escaping Egypt.
Right.
I mean, liberation is a huge part of it.
Of course.
But it also lays out the covenant with God at Sinai.
Right.
The laws that shaped a nation.
Yeah, the laws.
And even gets into the details of building the tabernacle.
Hold on. How much of Exodus is dedicated to this tabernacle building project?
A full third of the book.
Get it out.
12 chapters. All the details.
Every little.
Fabric, the wood, the precious metals.
So this must have been really important. What's the significance of this tabernacle anyway?
Well, that's where it gets fascinating. You see, the tabernacle represents God's presence dwelling right there with his people.
Okay.
It's like this portable temple.
A portable temple.
Moving with the Israelites.
Okay.
Professor Van Noy calls it a theocracy.
A theocracy.
God's the ultimate ruler.
Right.
And the tabernacle is like a physical representation of that.
So Exodus is about escaping one pharaoh, but then embracing a divine one. That adds a whole new layer to the idea of liberation.
Right? Exactly. Professor Van Noy really liked to connect Exodus back to the whole biblical narrative.
Yeah.
He contrasted it with Genesis.
Okay.
You know, in Genesis, Adam and Eve, they get expelled from God's presence.
Right.
But in Exodus, well, God comes back to dwell among his people.
Yeah.
So there's a powerful theme of restoration there.
Yeah, it's like bridging that gap.
Exactly.
Okay. So instead of humanity being cast out, God chooses to come back. That's a huge shift.
It is a huge shift.
So that sets the stage for everything that follows.
It does. Professor Van Noy was really into this scholar.
Oh, yeah.
William Henry Green.
Okay.
And Green saw the Old Testament in four parts.
Four parts.
Yeah. The law from Exodus is the foundation. Then you've got the historical books showing how that law played out in real life.
Okay.
And the poetic books, which are a more emotional response. And finally, the prophets, who reinforce and reinterpret the law.
Wow. So Exodus is like the seed that grows into the entire Old Testament.
It is.
But there's this one big mystery about Exodus that kind of bugs me. It's the date.
The date. The big question mark.
The big question mark. We don't know exactly when it happened.
Right.
The Bible doesn't actually name the pharaoh.
Nope.
And this has sparked like a centuries-long debate.
Oh, scholars have been arguing about this forever.
Forever. So you've got scholars in two main camps, right?
Two camps. You've got the early date folks who think it was in the 1400s BC during the 18th dynasty of Egypt.
Okay.
And then you've got the late date supporters who put it in the 1200s BC during the 19th dynasty.
Okay, let's start with the late date folks. Why the 1200s? What's their reasoning?
Their strongest argument comes down to one verse.
Okay.
Exodus 1:11.
Okay.
It talks about the Israelites building Pithom and Ramses.
Right, the store cities.
Store cities for the pharaoh.
Okay.
The thing is, one of them, Ramses, was named after a 19th dynasty ruler.
Okay, so if the city's named after a pharaoh from the 19th dynasty,
right,
that would seem to lock in the date pretty solidly, but I'm guessing it's not that straightforward.
You're right about that. See, the late date supporters used to say that no pharaoh had built in that part of the Nile Delta since the time of the Hyksos.
The Hyksos.
You know, the foreign dynasty, the 18th dynasty kicked out.
Right, right.
Well, recent archaeology has kind of thrown a wrench in that whole idea.
Really? So there's new evidence that contradicts that argument.
Exactly. Back in the 1990s, these Austrian archaeologists were digging at Avaris.
Avaris.
And, you know, most people think Avaris was the same place as the biblical Ramses. Okay. Well, they found evidence of 18th dynasty construction there.
Wow. So does that mean the early date wins? End of debate.
Not so fast.
Yeah.
Remember, we're talking about interpretations of texts and artifacts? Professor Van Noy talked about this scholar, J.K. Hoffmeyer.
Okay.
And Hoffmeyer says that the name Ramses might have been added to the Exodus text later.
Ooh.
Like it was originally called something else.
Ah, I see.
So the Israelites could have been working there during the 18th dynasty, but the city got renamed later, which is causing all the confusion.
So, like, it'd be like finding a building today that was built in the 1800s, but it's been renamed several times since then. The history is still there, but the name's changed.
Okay.
Okay, so that's one argument for the late date, kind of debunked, or at least shaken up a bit.
Right.
What's their second piece of evidence?
This one comes from Nelson Glueck. He was an archaeologist who did all these surveys over in the Transjordan.
The Transjordan.
The areas to the Jordan River.
Got it.
He was really focused on Moab and Edom.
Okay, Moab and Edom.
And from his surveys, he concluded that there weren't any permanent settlements in those areas before 1300 BC.
Hmm. And how does that connect to the Exodus?
Well, it creates a problem for the early date.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Bible says that the Israelites met the Edomites while they were traveling after leaving Egypt.
Right.
But if the Edomites weren't settled there in the 1400s... Yep. Then the Exodus couldn't have happened then.
So it's like saying you bumped into your neighbor on a street that hadn't even been built yet.
Exactly.
Okay, so if there were no Edomites living there yet, that does seem to clash with the biblical account. So is that it then? Does the late date theory win?
Well, archaeology is always changing. Newer research has actually challenged Glueck's conclusions.
Oh.
They're finding evidence that there may have been settlements in the Transjordan.
Okay.
Earlier than he thought.
So we're back to square one with this whole dating debate.
Looks like it.
It does. Man, this Exodus date is a real head scratcher.
It is, but that's why it's such a fascinating puzzle.
Well, you know, it is fascinating.
It is. And it shows us that history isn't always neat and tidy.
Not always. I feel like my head is spinning a little bit. We've gone from a Greek exit to Hebrew names, unpacked the significance of a portable temple, and even grappled with some archaeological mysteries. What's next?
Well, next up is the Pharaoh problem.
The Pharaoh problem. Okay, so if we can't figure out the exact year, maybe we can at least try to figure out which Pharaoh was on the throne.
Exactly.
So who are the top candidates, the prime suspects in our historical whodunit?
We'll dive into all that next time.
All right, so stay tuned, folks, because things are about to get even more interesting.
Oh, back.
All right, so we're back. And we're still trying to solve this Exodus mystery.
We are.
We've been talking about the book, you know, exploring its themes, tackling this big question of when it all went down.
Right.
There's still this other puzzle piece we haven't really looked at yet.
There is.
The Pharaoh problem.
The Pharaoh problem.
If we can't pinpoint the exact year, maybe we can at least figure out who this mysterious Pharaoh of the Exodus was.
Exactly.
I mean, the Bible doesn't name him, does it?
It doesn't. But there are clues we can use.
Okay, so we have to play detective a little bit.
A little bit. We can use the text, cross-reference it with Egyptian history, and see what we come up with.
It's like a historical whodunit.
It is.
So lay it on me. Who are our prime suspects? Who are the top contenders for Pharaoh of the Exodus?
Well, one name that comes up a lot is Thutmose III.
Thutmose III.
He was a powerful ruler from the 18th dynasty, known for his military campaigns.
Okay, a powerful pharaoh. But is there anything that specifically links him to the events of Exodus?
Not directly. There's no, like, inscription that says Thutmose III, Pharaoh of the Exodus.
Right.
But his reign does line up with some of the clues we have in the biblical text.
Like what?
Like the whole thing about the Israelites building those store cities.
Oh, right. Pithom and Ramses.
Yeah. If those were big construction projects during Thutmose III's time,
Well,
it could add weight to the idea that he was the pharaoh.
Okay, so that's one possibility. What about other potential pharaohs?
Another one from the 18th dynasty is Amenhotep II.
Amenhotep II.
He came after Thutmose III, also a strong ruler.
Right.
And some scholars even connect him to one of the plagues in Exodus.
Really? Which plague?
The plague of darkness.
Darkness.
Yeah. There are these old Egyptian texts that mention a period of like unusual darkness during his reign. But whether that's the same darkness as the plague, well, that's up for debate.
Of course. It wouldn't be a good mystery without a little bit of ambiguity.
Right.
Okay, so we've got two 18th dynasty pharaohs. Are there any from the 19th dynasty who make the cut?
Oh, yeah. The big one, Ramesses II.
Ramesses II. Now, that's a name I recognize.
Right. He's probably the most popular candidate for pharaoh of the Exodus, mainly because of that city.
Hi, Ramesses.
The one in Exodus 1.11.
Right. That does seem like a pretty strong link. But didn't we say earlier that the city name isn't a slam dunk?
We did. Remember those archaeological digs we talked about?
The ones at Avaris.
Turns out there's evidence of construction there from the 18th dynasty, even though people used to think it was built later.
So even with the city name, it's still not totally clear.
Nope. History loves to keep us guessing.
It does. Okay, so we've got Thutmose III, Amenhotep II, and Ramesses II. All strong contenders, but with some question marks.
Exactly.
Are there any other names in the running?
There are a few others, but those three are the ones you hear the most.
Makes sense. But you know what makes this even harder? The Bible doesn't tell us the pharaoh's name.
Doesn't make it easy, does it?
Not at all. It's like trying to solve a crime when you don't even know who the suspect is.
It is.
You just have to rely on the clues and try to piece it all together.
And we have to remember, the Bible's main focus isn't on giving us a complete history of Egypt.
Right.
It's on God and Israel's journey. That's the big story.
Okay, so the focus is on the theological message.
The message.
Themes of liberation, covenant, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Not so much on documenting every detail of Egyptian history.
Right. But even though we don't have the pharaoh's name, there are still things in the text that can help us understand the story better.
Like what? Give me an example.
We'll take the whole thing about the store cities.
Okay.
That detail tells us about the kind of labor the Israelites were forced to do and how important these cities were to the Egyptian economy.
Okay.
So then we can look at what we know from archaeology.
Yeah.
And see which pharaohs were building stuff during those time periods we've been talking about.
So it's like we're using one set of clues to unlock another set of clues.
Exactly.
I like it.
And there's another interesting thing in the text.
Okay.
It says the Israelites left Egypt with great possessions.
Great possessions.
Yeah.
What does that tell us?
It tells us they didn't just, like, sneak out in the middle of the night with nothing but the shirts on their backs.
Interesting. So it wasn't just a desperate escape.
Right. It raises questions about how oppressed they really were.
Yeah. And what the whole situation was with their leaving.
Exactly. It adds a new layer to the story.
It does. You know, it's amazing how much we can learn just from looking closely at the text. Then you combine that with all the archaeological findings, and it's like a giant puzzle.
It is. We have these clues from the Bible.
Yeah.
And then we have discoveries that sometimes confirm things, and sometimes challenge them. And then you have all these scholars trying to put it all together, arguing for different interpretations.
It never ends, does it?
Nope. The mystery continues.
It does. But I have to ask, why do we care so much about this? About the date? About which pharaoh was in charge? Does it really change the core message of the Exodus?
Well, that's an interesting question. See, the date and even the pharaoh, they might seem like small details.
Okay.
But they can actually tell us a lot about how the Exodus fits into the bigger picture.
Okay. The bigger picture of what?
Of biblical history.
Okay.
And how it relates to other ancient cultures.
I'm listening.
So let's say the Exodus happened in the 1400s BC. During the 18th dynasty, well, that lines up with a really chaotic time in the ancient Near East.
Chaotic? How? What was happening?
Well, you had the Hittite Empire on the rise.
The Hittites?
They were challenging Egypt's power. There were all these power struggles, shifting alliances.
Sounds dramatic.
It was. It was a world in flux. So if the Exodus happened during all that,
yeah.
Well, it wouldn't have been this isolated event.
It would have been part of something much bigger.
Exactly. And understanding all of that can change how we read the Exodus story.
Okay, so knowing the context adds another layer to it.
It does, a layer of depth and nuance.
All right, so that's the 1400s BC. What about the 1200s? What happens if we put the Exodus there?
Well, the 1200s is closer to when the Philistines became a major force in the region.
The Philistines. Now, those are some familiar characters.
They are.
Always battling with the Israelites later on.
Right, in Judges and Samuel. Always causing trouble.
Yeah. So if the Exodus happened right before they showed up, it might affect how we see the Israelites settling in Canaan.
It could. Imagine stepping into a new land.
Yeah.
And suddenly there's this new power player on the scene.
That would definitely change things. It's like a historical domino effect.
It is.
The Exodus fate changes how we see everything that comes after it.
Exactly. It just goes to show how interconnected everything in history really is.
It really does. My mind is blown.
Yeah.
So you know, this isn't just about pinpointing a date on a timeline.
Right.
It's about understanding the whole historical landscape.
The whole picture.
And how the Exodus fits into that. Wow.
And it makes you wonder, right?
About
what other events we might be misinterpreting.
Oh.
Because we don't fully understand the context.
Hmm. Good question. I'm starting to realize that history is way more complex than I thought.
It is. It's not just facts and dates. It's a story. An ever-evolving story.
Made up of all these threads, human experiences, cultural interactions, political forces.
Exactly.
So sad. You know, I feel like we've only scratched the surface here.
We have. But that's okay.
It is.
It is. Because we've laid a good foundation for you.
Oh.
For your own exploration of the Exodus.
You've given us the tools to keep digging.
I have. It's a journey worth taking.
It is. I agree. All right. So we've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive.
We have. We started with the historical debates.
Right.
Talked about the pharaohs.
Yeah.
And now we've even touched on some of the deeper meanings of the Exodus.
The theological side of things.
Exactly.
It's amazing how much there is to explore in just one book.
It is.
And listener, we really hope this deep dive has sparked something in you. We want you to keep exploring the Exodus, too.
There's something in there for everyone.
There is. Whether you love the historical mysteries, or you're more into the theological stuff, or you're just drawn to the power of this ancient story.
It's all there.
It's all there. So go dive in, explore, discover the richness of this book. You won't be disappointed.
You won't.
Welcome back, everybody, to our deep dive into Exodus.
Glad to be back.
We've been on quite the adventure, right? From figuring out what the name even means.
Right.
To all those possible dates and pharaohs.
And the mysteries.
And all the mysteries. It's like we've been time traveling through ancient Egypt.
We have.
But now it's time to get to the heart of it all.
The heart of the Exodus.
The heart of Exodus. The theological stuff. Why does the story still matter so much thousands of years later?
That's a great question.
It is a great question. So tell me, what are some of the big theological ideas we see in the Exodus narrative? What makes it so powerful?
Well, one of the most important ones is liberation.
Liberation, yeah.
At its core, the Exodus is about God rescuing his people from oppression.
Right, right.
And that message of hope and freedom. It's been inspiring people for centuries.
You know, it's true. The Exodus story isn't just about the Israelites, is it?
It's not.
It speaks to anyone who's ever felt trapped or longed for freedom.
Exactly. Think about all the movements for freedom throughout history.
Yeah.
People fighting for their rights, resisting tyranny. The Exodus has been a symbol of hope and resistance for them.
It's almost like a universal song of freedom.
It is. It transcends time and culture.
It does. Yeah. And it tells us that God sees people suffering, right?
Yeah.
And he steps in to help.
He does. That's a powerful message, especially when you're going through hard times.
It is powerful. Okay, so we've got liberation. What other big themes run through Exodus?
Another really important one is covenant.
Covenant.
Yeah.
The agreement between God and the Israelites.
Exactly. Remember, the Exodus isn't just about getting out of Egypt.
Right.
It's about becoming God's chosen people,
right.
Entering into this unique relationship with him.
Okay, so it's about belonging.
Belonging, yeah.
And the agreement they make at Sinai.
Right, Mount Sinai.
That's like the foundation for everything.
It is. Professor Van Hoy used to say that the covenant wasn't just about rules.
Okay.
It was about God's love and his desire for a relationship with his people.
So it wasn't just follow these rules or else.
No, it was about connection.
It was a two-way street. God choosing Israel and Israel choosing to follow God.
Exactly. And this idea of covenant, it becomes the foundation for so much of what we see in the Bible.
Yeah, it ripples through the whole thing.
It does.
Wow. Okay, so we've got liberation, we've got covenant. Is there anything else we should talk about?
One more. God's presence.
Oh, yeah. God's presence.
Yeah.
And how can we forget that tabernacle?
Right. That incredible structure.
Full of detail.
It was all about God dwelling with his people.
Being right there with them. I love that imagery.
It's powerful.
It is. So God goes with them wherever they go.
Exactly. And Professor Van Hoy always stressed how important this idea is to understanding the Exodus.
Okay.
It's not just about escaping bad stuff.
It's about something more.
It's about having a deep relationship with God.
Like going from being apart to being together.
That's a good way to put it.
And that theme continues throughout the whole Bible, doesn't it?
It does. And it reaches its peak, you could say.
When?
With Jesus.
It's Jesus, right? God becoming human.
God dwelling with us in a whole new way.
Wow. So Exodus is like a foreshadowing of that.
It is. It shows us God's desire to be close to us.
To be with us.
To bridge that gap between us.
It's beautiful, really, and it reminds us that we're not meant to be alone.
We're not. We're made for relationship.
With each other and with God.
Exactly.
This has been an incredible deep dive. Thank you for sharing all of this with us.
My pleasure.
We've covered so much, the history, the debates, those fascinating pharaohs.
It's been a journey.
And now all this deep theological stuff.
It's amazing how much there is to discover in Exodus, isn't it?
It is. It is. And listener, I really hope you've enjoyed this deep dive.
Me too.
And that you'll keep exploring Exodus on your own.
There's so much more to learn.
There is. Whether you're into the history, the theology, or just the power of this ancient story.
It's a book that keeps on giving.
It does. So thank you for joining us on this journey.
Thanks for having me.
And keep those deep dive requests coming. We love exploring with you. Until next time. Happy exploring.